All right, hey everyone, welcome back to the Foundry. This is your source for pirate accessories and pirate news. I'm Tony Hovater, and I'm joined by Matt Parrott. How are you today, my man?
I could be doing better.
What's going on there? What's happened?
Well, I got told it was pink eye over and over and over again. I went to two emergency rooms, and both the emergency room doctors were like, "Who farted on your pillow?" I was like, no, this is serious. This is not just pink eye. No,
I'm in pain, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were none of the typical symptoms of pink eye. Finally, I got to a proper optometrist. It's been about a week. I was starting to have trouble with it during last episode. I toughed through it, but it got violently worse this week. But anyway, they got drops in my eyes, and I'm on pills, and I'm all kinds of treated up. But the eye is in absolutely terrible shape this week. So hopefully I'll get to keep it.
Well, if this is a sort of roundabout way of rolling out like our new secret optics, you should have probably cleared this with me first. But you know what? That's okay.
Well, I was thinking this would be a good opportunity. First, we're going to go through the mailbag and the news and stuff. I want to talk that skit, Are We the Baddies? Kind of talk about narrative, talk about the whether we're the good guys or the bad guys, and how people kind of perceive us as a movement now that we both absolutely look like villains here.
Yeah, well, mine's a little more inborn, so I don't know who's more villainous, actually. You might be one of those, like, cool Bond villains that, it's kind of a gray area. You don't really know who's, like, oh, man, like, he's actually trying to do the right thing, though, you know?
Well, so you're born in the villainy. I adopted it later on.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, let's see here. Let me get to with our show, we're always listening to the listeners here, and I apologize. A few people emailed us. I'm going to email everybody back. It's htfoundry@protonmail.com. I had some stuff going on this week. I'm behind on everything. It's an absolute fire. You'll see it on the show. Our guest lineup didn't work out. This is going to be one of the worst shows we ever have. We're delivering it for you. All right. So with the mailbag, Aaron,
the best we can do is the worst. We can promise that at the very least.
So in our mailbag here, Arnett says, since both of you are visually on screen for the whole time, maybe better posture and facing the camera would help slightly with a bottle of water on your side for dry mouth. So I got my Marco Rubio water bottle here.
I only have a glass. Should I dump this out?
Yeah.
All right.
We have to take listener feedback very seriously here. Okay, so Ryan number one asks, I'm not sure what the process is of joining the Foundrymen or if you have anyone even in my area. Okay, so Ryan's email went into a bag that we're kind of collecting in compartments by state and stuff like that, so we can gently try to coordinate people while being careful about their doxing. And when you send that email, kind of let us know what your profile level is. We don't immediately know how fragile your situation is. Some people, like if I say your name is Ryan, boom, that causes a cascade effect where you get fired and are homeless and awful. And I'm very sensitive to that. I've been in this movement a long time. You know, people, I always get in the habit of using their screen name, even if they tell me their real name. They're like, my real name's Bob, but don't tell anybody. I'm like, well, why did you tell me? You know,
you're bound to slip up. I do the same thing all the time.
Well, and if somebody else reveals Bob's identity, then I'm on the list of people, you know. Well, I told Parrot, so
maybe. Yeah, Matt Parrot doxes another fucking, you know, movement guy. Yeah.
Hang on here. Okay. So Ryan number two, and actually I know who this Ryan is. Okay. So I listened to the Foundry this morning. Great job, man. Thank you, Ryan. I'm excited about the idea of mentoring in the trades and life, and I'm getting these boys some duck and getting these boys some docs proof skills. Not the greatest professional optics, and far from the worst. I've been a tattoo artist for 19 years. I've tattooed in every environment, from jails, prisons, and dope-infested ghettos and trailer parks to the nicest shops in your local Globo Homo suburban municipality.
Extremely descriptive. Is that actually on his resume?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. He's a sharp guy. I make between 60 and 80 grand a year, cash money, the best kind. And now that I'm a grown-ass man who goes to work to make shekels and have sat long enough at a nice location to build my client base. Okay, so we're going to have Ryan on the show to talk about tattoo artistry and probably have a broader discussion about how to be, you know, because you could actually, all these people trying to go to college to get a corporate job, the future, a lot of it is in artisan-style stuff like this. Like, you can actually... I mean, obviously, you have to have a modicum of talent to succeed as a tattoo artist. Or, you know, I see some tattoos out there. A lot of people apparently don't go to quality tattoo artists. But we're going to have
my favorite, though, the, you know, wonky Tweety Bird on the back of a, you know, fat woman with mulatto kids. Like, that's like, that's exactly what you want to see.
No, I've seen his tattoos. There, he does the very crisp lines and designs. And also, I have no tattoos because I want to be able to take my kids to the water park without being an international incident.
Also, being free and a virgin helps.
Hey, now I'm Volcel. Yeah. And Jordan asks, is NGINX something worth studying? Are there large numbers of jobs focusing on it? What websites post coding jobs, and how does one use them? Okay, so this goes back to last week with our computer programming as the docs resistant profession. NGINX is the alternative to Apache that's been getting bigger and bigger. Now, the thing about if you're doing web design out in the wild, you need to know NGINX and Apache. You can't. They're both popular enough. You've really got to know both of them. And as far as only knowing that, I wouldn't do that. You're smart enough to learn how to do that and know how to administer the database and know how to do the coding. Don't over specialize. You've got to be kind of an omnivore with this in order to pick up the jobs at like Upwork and Fiverr and places like that. NGINX is great. Because a lot of your problems and most web developers on those platforms don't they don't have those kinds of low level skills. So you can make a lot of money real fast by going for that. So that's my answer to that listener question.
Okay, is that all the?
Yep, that's our mailbag.
Okay, well, we actually missed one from last week here. I'll read this one. From Tractor Boy for Five. And I actually know this guy. This is a good guy. He says, do you think pro whites should enter into the medical field if they have the drive for it? Talking about nursing, physicians, or EMTs. I mean, I would say absolutely. I mean, that's an extremely important thing. You know, that's one thing we honestly, as a movement, have done a bad job of emphasizing. But, like, health is absolutely key to rebuilding, you know, who we are as a people and like getting things taken care of. Like, you
gotta be McNabb, right? Was actually an EMT technician.
Yeah. And he would be a solid guy to talk to about that too. You know, but there's really no reason not to do that. Absolutely. I would say go for it. And I know a few people that are in that field. It's just, you know, if that's your passion, if that's what you want to do, like, do it, man. And I'm pretty sure Parrot is frozen here. So, oh, wait, is he back?
Oh, that was me. He's going to have to refresh the call.
Okay. Yeah, Parrot apparently needs to learn to computer, so all of that really important coding work might have been pulled out of that.
It looks like he pounded the desk in it. completely froze up his hangout, so it was weird.
Oh. That's extremely odd. So are we paused, or what's going on here?
Guys, we're still going. He's paused, so yeah, you keep going. Shit happens. He just needs to refresh the call. I'm going to DM him on Twitter.
Okay.
Parrot's trying to find a clever way of getting out of this one. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, that was about it for the questions that we had. So I think the first thing, honestly, maybe we don't really need to go in a chronological order here for our show notes. One thing I really, really wanted to talk about was the State of the Union. And I acknowledge that it's been done to death. Everybody's talked about it. It's movement-wide. It was a slap in the face even appropriate for what that actually was, you know? I cannot believe that there are still people chilling for this guy at this point, you know? Let's see what he went through. There's a record number of women in the workforce. There's a record number of women in the, in the Congress. It's like, how are either of those things good? Like, we need women to be like being mothers and being wives, not like trying to go for the CEO, you know, board of directors, all that nonsense. Like, why do we need more of those? Just no, absolutely not. And then the thing with like women in, in the government, like, why are Republicans cheering for that? Like, the women that got elected, what's the ratio? Like 8 to 10 were Democrat. So they're just like, yay, like, we're glad like some of our dudes lost offices so like you guys can be here. What is that? Like, what are Republicans anymore? I don't have the spoon in the cup like sticks. So I don't have the cool incidental ASMR. That's a real shame. See what else? Oh, he was obviously he shilled for the Holocaust for the entire time. Somebody actually broke it down by minutes, like how long he spent talking about that. It was like the most consistent message that he had was, you know, Holocaust bad. Let's clap for all of these old Jews, you know. And I'm pretty sure didn't they just vote for that package, that aid package to Israel. No, they're not sending aids to Israel, but, you know, actually they're doing a good job of keeping that out of their country. You know, they built the wall. They did the whole bit. Like, maybe we should try that. I don't know. Okay. Apparently is getting it back on this. Yeah, I'm sad that we're being deprived of this eye patch scenario, because that was really nice. What are we saying here? I brushed my eyebrows this week. Are they looking better? They're usually looking pretty terrible, so I really appreciate that. Let's see. Okay.
Oh, okay. Can y'all hear me all right?
Yeah, we were talking about sending aids to Israel.
Okay. Yeah, my internet just went down. I'm on the hotspot now, so.
Oh, that's probably not much better.
Yeah, it's actually, it should be better. The hotspot here is incredible. Huh. Either way, where were we?
I skipped ahead in the show notes just because I wanted to talk about the State of the Union first.
Oh, okay. Well, we can talk about the State of the Union first.
I had already mentioned how he was shilling for more women in the workforce, more women in Congress, shilling for those sad old Jewish men who probably, you know, their grandparents or their parents or whatever got Holocausted like 9 times in the process.
Oh, the entire State of the Union was such a rebuke of his base. I mean, that was, if there was one way to summarize that State of the Union, it was, I don't need the base anymore. I'm pivoting to the mainstream now.
Yeah.
It was everything he could. Like, I'm looking for jobs for everybody but you guys who actually sacrificed for me. Is that better?
Yeah, your audio was starting to cut.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's just pandering to absolutely everybody but him. It's the most absurd political performance I've ever seen as far as the list of people he's fighting for and representing versus the list of people who actually put him in office.
Right. He spent a great deal of time, too, mentioning unemployment for, you know, Asians, blacks, Spanish. It's all record lows. And honestly, I didn't know unemployment within the Asian community was like a hot button subject. But, you know, I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
I guess it is for the small portion of Asians who voted for him.
Yeah. And what was the percentage of that?
Oh, I'm sure it's in the 30s or whatever. But no, and then you got to understand the Holocaust for this baby boomer generation that Donald Trump belongs to is their religion. It's
become like the state religion. It's not even just their thing. It's in most people's mind frame now.
Right. I mean, people don't understand just how central it is. Like if we took sandwich boards and I went to one side of town with a sandwich board that said, I worship Satan. And you went to the other side of town with Hitler had some good points. Who would be attacked? Who would provoke the outrage of the community? Who would be the villain that, you know, I could just imagine I'd be over there with my I worship Satan sign with these people walking up to me, high-fiving me, doing all these stuff like, hey, guy, you know, Jesus loves you too, but that's cool that you're a Satanist. Mm-hmm. People would actually be chasing you around, right? I mean, because that's...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and like, if you make somebody mad enough, they don't call you the devil anymore. They used to do that, right? In America, like if somebody was being evil or mean or bad, they'd be like, oh, that guy's got the devil in him. Oh, he's possessed. He's this or that. The worst thing you can be in this society is a Nazi. You know, if you make somebody mad enough, they'll call you a Nazi because that's the worst thing in their worldview, in their Holocaustianity, jumbled up boomer worldview.
Isn't that just like absolutely stunning that somehow that caught on? Like how has anybody besides that generation been tricked into that? You know?
Like, I don't know.
Because on its face, it's insane. It's just like, why would you pick to worship some random ethnic group? Because they had a sad time. You know, are people going to do this like with the Kurds eventually? Like, what is this?
Well, with World War II, you had this wartime propaganda that, and you had it for the Japanese too. Like, it was tremendously racist against the Japanese. I remember the cartoons.
They're not bad.
Yeah, they're fun. But, you know, they depicted the Japanese as an evil race of subhuman, like carpenter ants, right?
Yeah.
And the Nazis were these evil brainwashed villains who wanted to kill all the Jews. And that's what it was. It was wartime propaganda to dehumanize the enemy and mobilize people to go fight. And you have that in any major war, right? But for some reason, that wartime propaganda carried on after the war and actually grew and expanded, metastasized into something that swallowed up every part of traditional America.
No, that's what's really funny is like if you read, you know, people that wrote about, you know, the Third Reich or Hitler back in the day, like Hitler had a few historians and like foreign journalists that were kind of like stationed there in Berlin and like just kind of followed him around and, you know, wrote about the day to day. What's his name? William Shirer is one of them, you know, but like at the time, even during the war, people thought after all this, like he'll probably be regarded in a somewhat fair light. You know, because they do with Mussolini, they regard Churchill with like actually increasingly kind of a critical eye, which is weird because I forget who coined the term, but we had the cult of Churchill for a while, you know. But for this one guy, for this one group of people and these certain sets of ideas, it's never changed. And I think I said it last week, but if I didn't know any better, buddy, I'd start thinking that maybe a certain group of people controlled, you know, maybe how to get this information out there. But, you know, that's pretty conspiratorial. I don't know about that.
Well, watching the State of the Union, it just kept coming back to these World War II veterans. They saved the Jews. We saved the Jews. We're the best country in the world because we saved the Jews. And that's actually our complete, like, that's America's purpose for existing. was liberating those camps.
A lot of people seriously believe that. Like, they honest to God, like, not just think and believe that America is literally a golem that was, like, the founders, they set up this country for some sort of a preordained mission to establish Israel and protect it, you know? Like, that's a thing, like, people believe. And I think I think this is another thing.
Bible?
Yeah. This is another thing I think I mentioned on the last show. But there's this awful group on Facebook that a lot of us are in, and I'm sure there's some people listening that are in the same group. It's called Tucker Carlson Fox News on Facebook. And basically everybody should try to get in there, to be quite honest. If you ever thought that we could reach conservatives, that we could reach boomers, that we could reach normal Republicans just by, like, changing, you know, optics, changing, like, a little bit of messaging, like, this will disprove all of that for you. It's I've seen a lot of people get blackpilled in there. It's actually insane. Like, Trump, in these people's minds, he's been, like, deified. He can literally do nothing wrong. He could actually slap you in the face and shit down your neck, and they'd still be like, oh, he's building the border, probably, even though I'm not doing it. They'd love it. They'd love him for it.
Well, earlier this week, he announced that we're going to expand immigration.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. I forgot about that part. I feel like part of my brain maybe is blocking out some of the worst aspects of the State of the Union. Because I was at work at the time, so I didn't get to watch it. But I was seeing, like, everybody's posts from time to time, and I checked my phone. And I was like, oh, no. Something's going on. Like, what am I missing here?
Yeah, well, his thing is we have so many jobs now because of he's so awesome with the economy that we don't have enough workers for all the jobs we've created. Somehow employment has gone below zero, and we absolutely must bring in all these migrants now.
Yeah, that was something that I was talking to a boomer about. Actually, this group has been great because I've been getting messaged just a ton by these boomers, you know, with threats of death and all that, because that's what they do. I was critical of legal immigration, so they're like, you die now, you know. But that was actually one point, one of the boomers who had a Thai wife, unironically, he's in Thailand right now with his wife. He was talking about, like, well, you know, we got to, like, keep increasing jobs. We got to make jobs. And I'm like, well, why, though? Like, if they're not for us, like, why do we care? I don't understand. Like, how have you, like, I guess, hitched yourself to, like, GDP? Like, that's what life has been about this whole time. Like, everything our ancestors did for all time, all that toiling, you know, in the fields, all the wars, you know, all the inventiveness, everything was just to increase the gross domestic product for the United States of America. That seems strange to me. Isn't there a little bit more than that?
there might be, but for these people, there's and that's where we do have to address these big issues like historical narrative, historiography. Narrative matters more than facts, and that's an important thing that people have to understand, is you cannot, even with these people, even if you give them a list of facts that you think would require them to agree with you, if you don't actually, now you can give people enough facts that you can eventually kind of topple their narrative. That happens with some younger people, and rarely with older people, though the older a person gets, the more kind of calcified their narrative is.
Right.
They're not going to see America beyond serving the Jews if they've spent their entire life seeing America as being a good nation, seeing America as being chosen by God because we chose the Jews.
Isn't it sad, though, that, like, such infantile messaging worked on generations of people? Like, that, like, the average IQ is that low that you can literally be like, no, not only are we pretty good, we are literally, like, destined, like, chosen by the creator of the universe to always be the good guys. How would anybody buy that? I understand, like, well, people want to feel moral and stuff, but it's like there's no amount of you know, self-reflection you're capable of doing. Like, you can't put this together.
Well, you got to remember, at that generation, there was no internet. There was no way to get woke, right? There was no alternative messaging. And people talk about the Soviet samizdat and how brainwashed all these other people are, but you know, the thing was in America before the internet created these opportunities, there was really no horizon beyond the propaganda on the big networks.
Sure, but like I understand that. I understand that they were limited on actual facts. I'm saying on an instinctual level, like if somebody tells me something extremely like utopian or fantastical, I kind of, you know, I'd question it just a little bit. Like, well, maybe you're saying this for a reason. No, it can't be that good. But for some reason, everybody just took it. And I guess it's because their generation, you know, I guess life was so good. You know, why would they question it? I suppose. But like, I don't know. That's really odd. I guess the ones that did question it became the Noam Chomskys of the world. But, you know, they're doing their own thing.
Yeah. And the people who did question it ended up out in the wilderness, right? Like with sad little newsletters and stuff that got no publicity. And at the end of the day, most people are self-serving and don't center on these issues. So say you're an optometrist, no offense to my optometrist this week, but that's your world. Your life is optometry and your family. Okay. So you're just not investing that much time in understanding world politics and understanding metapolitics and understanding these things. So you just kind of take what's offered. You take what's normal. And then when you add on top of that, the fact that if you deviate from that, you lose your career. Your wife leaves you because you've gone off the deep end and you're no longer, you know, making money. You know, there's this soft oppression, the soft tyranny in America that's really more effective than the brutal tyrannies that we often like to snarl at.
Yeah, you don't need hard, you know, oppression, hard tyranny to actually keep people online. And, you know, that was something that, what's his name? The Frankfurt School, Marcuse. That was something that he talked about a lot. And he wasn't wrong on. I get he's Jewish. You know, a lot of his critiques weren't wrong. His outcomes, like what he wanted, were terribly wrong, though, you know. And that's kind of a thing that a lot of, like, Jewish and left-wing thinkers do. They'll kind of give you a little bit like, oh, that seems reasonable. But then you're like, oh, but you're trying to apply it this way. No, that's terrible. I don't want to turn my country into a brown orgy. What do you mean? But that was one thing that he had talked about, that, you know, the system is kind of a lot more insidious than people really think. You know, there's so many like creators, like, he had termed them like culture creators, that kind of enforce norms, and then normal people reinforce those norms because they don't want to break that line, you know. So people self-censor and self-check themselves just to make sure things are going along, like far more than if you actually like kicked in their door and, you know, were inspecting for like their portrait of, you know, Kamala Harris or whatever on their wall.
Right. Right. Well, what people will see is that self-censorship starts a vicious cycle where you actually do your own oppressing for the system. And you've seen that with the support of Donald Trump in the hard right over the past couple of years. I've seen people who came from our side who are white nationalists who got so wound up on the Trump train and so lost in that, you know, Trump revolution, everything that they've self-censored themselves from things that I know that they know, right? And they're ignoring these things about how the Trump administration is serving Jewish power. It has completely pivoted away from even mildly promoting a national populist agenda. And they don't care. They've decided that they no longer, the truth is not the paramount thing for them, which is an important thing to keep in mind.
Sure. And, you know, but the thing is, like, you have another, like, the other side also doesn't care about the truth whatsoever. You know, like, they're doing their bit no matter what. So at the very least, don't you think we should be doing our bit and pulling things to the right? Like, Trump, you know, because we were having these conversations back as soon as he announced, you know, like, this is going to be a sort of a platform. This is going to be sort of a tool that we can use to start introducing these talking points to people. And Trump will kind of act as a wedge. Like, who honest to God thought he was the God Emperor? Who really thought he was going to be the guy that was going to destroy Zog? you know, immediately when he announced who was going to be in his cabinet, like, people should have probably taken a little bit of stock, like, ooh, you know, if we get something here, maybe it's going to be a little bit hard fought, you know?
Well, and that's where we, and by we, I mean me, but a lot of us really messed up in 2016, was we understood that Trump was kind of a vehicle for promoting our memes, something to kind of exploit and then be ready to pivot away from when necessary. But we didn't effectively communicate that to a lot of people who weren't in on the joke. And we ended up with the alt-right and the Trump Revolution ended up being co-opted more rapidly and effectively than the Tea Party or the John Birch Society or the myriad other conservative populist revolts that came before.
Right from the get-go.
Oh, it was embarrassing how quickly there wasn't even, like, with the Tea Party, there was a slow process of corruption and osmosis. But with this, it was just instantly like, bang, thank you for winning us the election. And now we're going to do the opposite.
Yeah, we're going to not do those things. And that's actually a point that people keep bringing up about the State of the Union when they try to actually defend it. And there's even people in the alt-right that have done it. And it's really odd to me. You know, they'll be like, well, he mentioned things that, like, his base would like. He talked about not wanting America to be socialist. He mentioned abortion. And it's like, yeah, he mentioned it, though. Like, the Supreme Court, like, I don't remember if it was the day before or the day after, was like, no, like, we have to let this abortion clinic be funded in, where was that, Louisiana or something? You know, so it's like, well, that didn't matter. And then, oh, we're not going to let America be become a socialist country. Like, A, you know, how isn't it already? And B, what does that mean? Like, as soon as Trump's gone, like, the radical left is taking over. That's just how it is. They literally just have to wait it out, keep saying Orange Man is bad, and yeah, we're objectively going to have a socialist country, which isn't even that bad. Like, here's the thing. Like, socialism isn't bad. Like, I don't fear, like, big government. I fear bad government. And we have a bad government now that's not helping us. But if all of a sudden, you know, we lived in, like, a Scandinavian-style socialist country that served us, like, why would I be mad? Like, obviously, there's, like, you know, libertarians would be mad about this, but I can't imagine there's actually any real unironic libertarians anymore. I thought they've all become Nazis or, like, weird commies. So, honestly, why do we even care about that type of thing anymore?
Well, you know, AOC's big Green New Deal thing this week really drove home. Like, I'd like to see Medicare for all. There's sure. No sense in these people dying because they don't have insulin, and every gas station having a little tin can for a child with cancer because our system, there's no point in that. And if we stopped investing trillions in these foreign wars and everything, little Timmy with leukemia could be a priority. You know, helping our children live could be a bigger priority than killing foreigners' children. That's a reasonable goal.
Well, too, like, about, like, Medicare for all, minorities and stuff, like, they already get that. Like, they've already got it. Like, the only people not benefiting are us. And, you know, for the accelerationists in here, you know, if you think that's going to help bring it all down, then cool, let's do it. You know, like, that sounds fine. But no, that's the thing. Like, we do unironically subsidize everybody else's health experience, their food, everything in this country besides white people. So let's just do it all the way. Say, fine, like, let's make it a human right, whatever. Let's just do it. That way we can benefit.
The government's very responsive. So when our people are saying, hey, let's have less government services, the government's like, okay, you guys have less government services now. You're welcome. They don't slow down the government services to the people who are saying, hey, we want more government services. So it's the ultimate con job, right? You know, our people pay the taxes and their people get the tax money. And we agree to that implicitly because we're saying, hey, we don't want any of those services back. And we're afraid to speak up about the people who are getting the services. Yeah, and the government glad to facilitate that pipeline.
Yeah, and somehow it's like a weird pride thing with us too. You know, like, oh, I'm not going to sign up for these things. Like, you might as well. And you know what? I'm kind of talking out my ass here because I haven't. I should. It's like the money's there and other people are going to use it. Why should I not try to get that? And maybe me and my wife can afford to have a child. You know, maybe we should go for that. I think that might be a little bit helpful.
Oh yeah. Well, that's one thing with the Foundry Men. That's one thing we're going to focus on a later episode is not only with small business loans, which are a huge, the SBA is a great way to get a small business started, but there's also, you know, with welfare, a lot of people out there would qualify for disability, but for the various reasons you talked about, are just too prideful to take what the system has on the table. You know, we kind of already have a bullshit UBI in this country, a slow creeping universal basic income, but it's not direct UBI. You have to jump through one hoop or the other to get in on it. And, you know, the way it's set up is if you're a minority, if you're an immigrant, if you're one of these protected groups, you have all these advocates and frameworks to help you get set up with that. But if you're just a white guy out in the country, not only do you not have those resources at your disposal, but you have this culture, this tradition of saying, oh, no, I'm too proud for that.
It's completely goofy. It just absolutely is goofy. Another thing about the State of the Union, he spent a good deal of time talking about all of the brown drug dealers that he's helping to let out of prison and get jobs. So that was a pretty bold move. And I mean, let's be honest, like there are some silly laws in America that probably should be reformed a little bit, but it's not exactly something people cared about. It is not an important thing. And it was mostly Jared Kushner that helped him do this. So it's like, going to have to take that one with a grain of salt there.
Well, there's this fiction that, you know, the United States has been locking up black people for no reason just because of racism.
Yeah.
And the crime stats are clearly there. And these things always run aground on the facts when they try to actually say, like, this person's unfairly imprisoned, that person's unfairly imprisoned. I know they tried to cry about that that black guy who tried to get an imam for his execution in Alabama last week. His crime was so horrific, I don't even want to talk about it on here. But, you know, they're crying because Alabama wasn't able to find an imam in time for his execution. And he didn't get the religious service that he wanted. And if you read the crime, it's like, oh my gosh, just...
Yeah, it's always stunning, right? But that's never, ever going to be a thing that's mentioned. That's just not how this works, you know? And into the crime stats, and I'm sure everybody here knows this type of stuff, but if not, it's a really funny thing to hit people with. Like, most of the time, blacks aren't being locked up because of, like, oh, like, you are just driving around and you went over the speed limit, gee whiz, you know? It's like, they're speeding, and then they're found with a gun that isn't registered to them. And then there's drugs on them as well. You know, like that stuff adds up. And people forget that, like when people are being sentenced, you know, like judges take into account the things that are happening all at once in prior convictions. But that shit never makes it there. And that's just another example of narrative being far more important than facts.
Right. Well, and they oftentimes plead down, so they'll plead down to some drug conviction when actually it was armed robbery and all kinds of other god-awful stuff, too. And then that looks in the aggregate statistics like some kind of broad general injustice that really isn't there if you get out into the weeds. But either way, they're unleashing them, so we'll welcome them back in our community.
I'm sure they're all going to be reliable Republican voters and will help sweep Trump into a second, third, fourth, and fifth term in office. It's going to be really good.
Okay. Looks like we got a super chat here. This is a good question. I'm going to turn it over to you first. Alt Media for $10. If Trump is not a shock to the system and is just another Jeb Bush, then why is every liberal and everyone in the deep state and the media so against him? That itself is why we should vote for him in the 2020. Trump is not a lost cause. No more black pills.
Okay. You want me to answer that first?
Yeah.
Well, it's basically what we were saying. Like, they've got a good target for their malice, you know, like it doesn't really have anything to do with what he's actually doing. Because when you break it down, you know, doing things like moving the, you know, Israeli capital or the embassy to Jerusalem, literally just like a week ago, he signed that thing into law where they're like going to help support like women-owned businesses in foreign countries. Like, a lot of money and time are being wasted on all this nonsense. You know, they don't hate him because he's doing what they don't want. They hate him because it's a convenient target. You know, it doesn't matter who's there. Any Republican is going to be literally Hitler when he's in office. It's just Trump kind of had this crass thing. And, you know, he's a blonde hair, blue eyes, straight white male. So that's like perfect for them to like, you know, it's kind of like in like a fantasy book or something. Like it adds to their world building. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of trying to write history today, you know, like because for the next like 50 years, every villain in a movie is going to be, you know, this very crass New York businessman. He's going to do this thing a lot. He's going to point, you know, he's going to have goofy hair, like, and everybody's going to remember like, oh my God, remember those dark times when we had literally orange Hitler as president, you know, that's literally just it. Like the ones in the know are not, they can't actually be mad at Trump because he's not really hurting them in any way, you know, aside from like the Supreme Court picks, I suppose a little bit, but you know, what was it? Kavanaugh did as soon as he got, you know, confirmed, he hired like a ton of like black female, staffers and then like voted against like an abortion bill or abortion law. So like, what is it that they're actually mad at? You know, I think it's just kind of political theater and it'll help get more of their people in and possibly get him out and get unironically, we'll probably get Kamala Harris into office. And once again, I want to stress that the narrative is so much more important because there are people that no matter what you show them about Trump, no matter what you show them about any politician, it doesn't matter. Like they have in their head that orange man bad. It's been reinforced, you know? So why would they be objective here and be like, well, you know, he's given us a little bit, you know, we should probably go easy on this guy. You know, no, they're going to keep fucking, they're going to hit it forever until they get their way on absolutely everything.
Well, you sort of struck on, but I'd like to go deeper. With Jewish psychology, it's hard to explain just how triggering Trump is on a visceral level. Forget his policies. Forget his statements. Okay. Back to the Future 2, back in the 80s, the screenplay was written by a Jew. And the villain, Biff, if you remember Biff from Back to the Future, was modeled after Donald Trump. Okay. So he, in his over-the-top alpha persona, he is like the stereotypical goyim that they lose sleep over at night. How he's more confident than them, how people are more impressed by him when he walks into a room and can command an audience. His face, his hair color, everything about him just triggers Jewish people. Okay. And yeah, they're going to hate him no matter what. And we've seen that, even though he spent the entire State of the Union talking about how much he loves the Jews, even though the majority of his family is converting to Judaism, even though his policies have been the most Israel friendly in modern memory, it doesn't matter because they see him as the embodiment of a white America that they positively despise on a visceral level. So, you know, it trolled them to an extent to get him elected, but now we're in the situation where he's provoked them without actually moving the ball forward for any of our interest, without actually doing anything for the white American working class. And now you're going to see this vicious backlash against us, and he's going to be out of the way. And yeah, we're going to be the ones eating that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, look at any like Jewish comedy for like the last like 30 years, like every like Harold Ramis movie or something. Who's the bad guy? You know, it's the WASP. It's the Chad. You know, it's basically everything they're not, you know, and it plays into like their sort of like self hero worship where they want to take down that big evil bully. And then the cute white girl will finally see he was the supreme gentleman, you know. It's just absolutely, it's just literally, it's what they do. It's all they do. Every book, every movie in politics, this is the thing. They hate the straight, white, strong, you know, white male, and they're going to come after him. it doesn't matter. It's over.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think this is like a black pill either. And I was just talking to some people about this the other day. The black pill, for lack of a better term, is actually the ultimate white pill. You know, like you need to understand that it's not, help isn't coming from the outside. Like it's us. Like we are going to be the ones to fix this. And we have the ability. You know, we're starting to build the networks. We're starting to get the resources to do this. We're starting to get the legal framework to actually be able to, for the first time in American movement history, be able to have an effect, be able to help our people. So, you know, Trump is just, he's one guy. And honestly, federal politics to me don't matter all that much. You know, so if he's president or not, it doesn't change what I do. And it shouldn't change what you do either. Like you should be trying to help your people no matter what. And I think we can do that.
Okay. With this highly unstructured disaster episode here, we're just going to let the chat room take it over. Okay, so Bird's Eye View over in the chat room asks, super serious question. Why do Jews not want a white America, Tony?
Well, why would they? If they're living in a place that's completely homogenous, they're going to stand out a lot more. And that was like an issue that they faced in Europe over and over again. You had them being kicked out of, was it actually in Venezuela? There was some town where they got booted because people recognized, hey, these guys that aren't us, or they seem to be up to no good. And, you know, honestly, do what?
I think it was Honduras.
Was it Honduras? It was something like that. That's the thing. And that's going to happen to them. If you're in a place that is a lot more diverse, like, why would you notice a Jew if, like, your loud, you know, black neighbors and your, you know, weird Chinese neighbors are, like, fighting with each other? Like, why would you notice any of that? Like, why would you care about a Jew? Like, you just wouldn't notice it. You'd be like, he kind of looks like me. I'll leave him alone.
Well, and people can't unite around anything, right? And that's what's critical. In a multicultural empire, including a prolapsed empire, where it started out as a nation state, and then you just keep piling on more nations into the state until you have an empire, there's no ability of all these squabbling factions to unite against one hostile faction that needs to be opposed.
Yeah, and no, somebody in the chat just said this is like white nationalism 101. Yeah, it is. Man, this is the starter course. We should have done a TED Talk.
Let's see. Let's go through a couple of our... We did aggregate some news here that we should probably go ahead through. So, okay. The first one, Trump. U.S. will retain some troops in Syria for now to protect Israel. President Donald Trump said the United States would retain influence in Syria in order to protect Israel, even as U.S. troops are withdrawn. We're going to be here and we're going to be staying. We have to protect Israel, Trump told Margaret Brennan on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday when asked about a timetable for the withdrawal of the 2,000 troops. We have to protect other things that we have, but they'll be coming back in a matter of time. Trump suggested the continued U.S. presence in Iraq would be a bulwark against Iran's influence in the region. I want to be able to watch Iran. All I want to do is be able to watch, he said. We have an unbelievable and expensive military base in Iraq. It's perfectly suited for looking at all over different parts of the troubled Middle East rather than pulling up. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. We're going to keep watching and we're going to keep seeing. And if there's trouble, if somebody's looking to do nuclear weapons or other things, we're going to know before they do, he said. He called Iran a vicious country that kills many people.
This boomer post brought to you by the John Bolton gang.
Well, it's just such a whiplash inducing thing. Like you said, we're leaving Syria. And then deep state was like, actually, no, you're not. And so a few weeks later, he limps back. And he's like, OK, we're not leaving Syria because Israel won't let us. My bad.
Yeah. Sorry. Like, we're going to keep a base in Iraq forever. Yeah. No. and the prime minister, or whatever the office is called over there of Iraq, was like, well, you might want to like run that type of stuff by us first. You know, we're just like, yeah, we're just, you know, we're there forever, I guess. Cool. Great. What happened to, you know, like primary Trump that had decided that, the Iraq war was a disaster. You know, he wasted all that money. Remember when he dunked on Jeb, whatever debate that was, it was the one where the plane was in the background. Remember there? Yeah. He like made fun of Jeb for having all of his, donors there. Like he was like, hey, like your brother literally started a disastrous war and wasted all this money and all these lives. But now we're just like, yeah, but I mean, like, let's go ahead and keep doing that. Let's do literally not even like something similar. Let's do that.
Well, he's even opening up new fronts, like in Venezuela. Yeah. Him and Bolton are talking about cracking open a whole new can of imperial whoop ass.
Yeah, fuck yeah. No, people were saying on like Face the Nation that not Fash the Nation. I don't want anybody to think I'm being a dick here. Face the Nation. They were saying that like the American people are going to unite around. They're going to rally around Trump if we go into Venezuela. Like, yes, the main thing that Trump's coalition of like Rust Belt white males, like the main thing they were clamoring for was please, please, God, let's get rid of Maduro. You know, like, does anybody even know where Venezuela is? Do they know who Maduro is? Do they understand any of this? Or do they just know they're socialist and that's about it? Something, something oil, you know?
Well, I don't get it. If socialism is so bad, then why does it require us militarily toppling these socialist countries? If it requires sanctions and turning all the screws on them to topple the whole thing.
That's easy. It's because their government is so bad and so socialist that they don't even have a choice, Matt. They already got that in the bag.
Okay, now this next one, I haven't watched this, and I don't know if I will. Tell me if I should. I've seen it on Netflix, and I just kind of rolled my eyes. Like, alt-right, Age of Rage.
Oh, yeah. No, you should watch it. It's good. I was actually, me and Maria watched it as, like, we put it on as, like, a hate watch, because I absolutely hate to have a good time. I just refuse to do it. If I'm going to watch something, I want to be irritated, you know?
Right.
So we put it on, and, you know, after, like, a few minutes go by, and I'm like, I'm not really mad yet. You know, but like we just kept watching and it was like pretty fair. Like it kind of made Daryl, you know, Lamont Jenkins look kind of like a weird quasi liar, you know, and Spencer, it kind of made him look like a normal dude. It was just like I haven't seen a documentary about the alt-right that was this unbiased. It's actually like somebody went into this wanting to tell about both sides. I thought that type of shit was over. I didn't think we did that anymore.
Oh, huh. Well, the promo shows like an obvious Antifa guy, and he's supposed to be the alt-right, right? So I just assumed it was going to be an egregious hit piece.
Now, based on the cover, of course. And, you know, I mean, that's honestly probably clever marketing if they made it like, oh, like Antifa bad, like they would have to market only on Breitbart or their shit would be fucking buried so deep nobody would ever see it again, you know?
Now, was DLJ on gangster mode or nerd mode?
I mean, a little bit of both. Whenever okay. he's the camera
he's in either front all of one him, or the other. Okay.
Yeah. Well, obviously he plays up the cool tough guy thing and it's like, you know, come on, guy. And like most people like in the movement that actually have talked to Daryl, they know he's kind of just like a soft-spoken, kind of nervous guy. You know, he's not like the tough dude he tries to like present on the whenever there's a camera in his face. And I think that's pretty funny. But yeah, of course he's doing the, oh man, if you're going to do this, you better expect that. And it's like, okay. You know, like we know you, we know how this really is. Like it's mostly a silly joke.
Right.
No, but, so, but everybody
do you
should
recommend
check it out.
People watch it or not?
Yes. Yes, please watch it and tell me what's up. All like 12 of you know, alt-right people that still have a Netflix account. You know, I'll cancel when they take Frasier off and I heard they're doing it, so, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. That was the last bastion of straight white yuppie supremacism and it's over.
So wait, you actually have a Netflix account in your name?
No, I don't. I use somebody else's.
I was going to say, I've never met anybody who has my Netflix account is of a friend's friend's senile stepdad's brother.
Yeah, as far as I know, there's actually only one Netflix account that exists in the world and everybody just shares. And that would explain why it takes so long to buffer sometimes. But yeah, you know, I haven't actually done any digging, but I'm willing to bet that's the case.
I would cancel my account, but
I don't pay for it, so yeah.
Sorry, Netflix. Okay, so Ruth Bader Ginsburg is alive. She makes her first public appearance since cancer surgery. Ginsburg did not speak, and many in the crowd did not know she was there. She sat in the back, and most saw her only as they left the performance. Michaels did not announce her presence. So where was this at? What's going on here?
She went to something, and I guess, yeah, like that little clip says there, like they say she was just in the back. Nobody said anything. Like, she didn't say anything. Nobody noticed her, but she was totally, absolutely there. You know, I'm not usually one to be like, something's up. But it's been months, you know, and they were like, I remember the articles were like, oh man, like they're preparing for the worst, you know, like this is probably it for Ginsburg, and Trump's going to have to like get somebody prepared to take her place. And then the very next day, they're like, oh, no, actually, turns out she's A-OK, like somehow doing surgery on an old woman, like an 80-year-old woman. Just there was no complications. Everything's fine. Please don't ask any questions. Like, that is actually weird. And I don't think it's actually a Weekend at Bernie scenario, but I can't prove it's not anymore.
Yeah, there's no real line on how senile and non-functional, as long as she still has a pulse, like all her aides can still be Ruth Bader Ginsburg for all practical purposes. So, you know, it's kind of like that person in the back of the nursing home that's just kind of like lying in the bed, like, you know, squeeze my finger once for yay, squeeze my finger twice for nay. Like, how far gone? And there's the president is pretty much, as long as there's a pulse there, they can continue the charade. So kind of a macabre situation.
Yeah, no, it appears it's a sort of Warhammer 40,000 Emperor on the Throne scenario where they're keeping her alive by, like, sacrificing, like, children to her or something to, like, keep her soul bound to this living corpse.
Just keeping her. Foreskins and
bloody a steady muscles. Diet. Yeah, absolutely.
Lots of stem cells. Okay, well, one big thing here, Tony, I really need to drive home to our audience is Alt Media sent us $10. Okay, and he wants us to be more pro Trump. So I'm going ahead. We're switching our show's narrative here.
Okay.
For him. If you guys want us to change our opinion, you need to outbid him. You need to go in there and donate $11. We'll go back to being anti-Trump. So NBC News, South Korea signs deal to pay more for U.S. troops after Trump demand. South Korea and the United States struck a new deal Sunday on how much Seoul should pay for U.S. military presence on its soil after previous rounds of failed negotiation caused worries for their decades-long alliance. Last year, South Korea paid about $830 million. Roughly 40% of the cost of deployment. And President Trump has said South Korea should pay more. On Sunday, chief negotiators from the two countries signed a new cost-sharing plan which requires South Korea to pay $924 million in 2019. Okay, so with that news story, there's an actual pro-Trump news story, right? Like, he was bellowing about how we're going to get better deals out of these countries, and we have a definitive situation where that happened, right?
Yeah, and honestly, it's odd to me. The South Korea thing I figured would be like one of the, you know, like stranger issues that would probably go on for a lot longer. And, you know, ultimately nothing would really change. But it really does seem like our boy, Kim Jong-un, the Juche gang, is actually like willing to make some concessions. And it's I don't really know what to think of it, because there's like this counter narrative going along with it that like they're totally faking. They're not going to get rid of any of their nukes. They, in fact, might be testing more. So I don't know. I don't know, honestly, what to believe. Because if I was Kim, I wouldn't get rid of them. There's no chance in hell. Like, that's what's been keeping, unironically, imperialists out of North Korea. So I don't know why they would be so willing to do this. But, you know, we'll see. I'm glad it's happening. Like, I would prefer there not to be a, you know, nuclear holocaust along the, 33rd parallel, 32nd, what is that?
38.
Yeah, 38, whatever. It's somewhere in there. You know, I'd prefer the DMZ not be, you know, utterly just vaporized.
Yeah, I mean, my working hypothesis is that the Korean situation is far enough away from Jewish interests that Trump is kind of allowed that sandbox to be Trump. And I think, you know, I'm more sympathetic to Trump than a lot of people out there, a lot of anti-Trumpers. I'm still an anti-Trumper, but I do think my big thing about Trump is I think he's far more stupid than you guys give him credit for. And I say that as a good thing. Like, I really think he didn't understand that his positions on like Syria and Iraq and stuff would not be acceptable to the Jews until he got into office. And they were like, Donald, there's more going on here than you understand.
Right. And, you know, that's something that like I've thought about, like, maybe they realized that he was going to be going ham on somebody and they'd rather it be on North Korea, where they don't really lose anything than if he were to really be trying to make a deal with Iran. You know, obviously they would never let that happen. But honestly, like, you know, if Korea is absorbed basically into the South, it'll just be another, you know, sort of wing of Globo Homo. You know, I understand, like, there's, you know, less than desirable conditions in North Korea. Like, I'm not a person that's going to pretend it is like the propaganda paradise that they put out there. But unironically, like, the nukes were what were keeping the West out. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of people living in really shit conditions, but there's no little boys dancing at drag shows. So it's like, you know, take your pick there. I'd rather eat lower quality fast food, to be quite honest.
It's rare in geopolitics to have such a perfect like corollary example, right? Where you've got Vietnam, and we tried to do the exact same thing, and eventually just decided to piss off, and everything worked out great.
Yeah, and too, like the spook of global communism back then. What is wrong in Vietnam right now? It's got like a functioning market. There's free enterprise within there. They just have one party. That's it. Obviously, there's a lot of top-down bullshit. But like, you know, what did we gain? Like, why did those guys have to die? Like, why did we send so many of our young men to get killed in a jungle when ultimately we fucked off? And also, it's not really different than any, you know, Southeastern country now, Southeast Asian country. Like, what was the deal?
Yeah, there's no point to it. Okay, so check this out. CNN reports, Ilhan Omar says it's exciting her controversial views on Israel are sparking debate.
Ilhan Omar? Was that the fellow that shot up that place in Orlando?
No. This is the girl who married her brother as an immigration scam. Freshman Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota is defending her controversial views on Israel as they come under scrutiny in Washington, telling CNN that it's not surprising her positions are generating attention and that she finds it exciting to be sparking debate. It's not surprising. I think it's actually exciting because we're finally able to have conversations that we weren't really willing to, Omar told CNN on Tuesday. It is really important for us to get a different lens of what it could look like, the kind of difficult conversations that we need to have about allies.
Yeah, I got to say,
if you followed Ilhan Omar, she and that Tlaib lady have been pretty solidly anti-Israel, BDS. It's called anti-Semitism on the left. This woman, obviously, Representative Omar, you are formally invited on our show to explain your positions. We will give you a fair platform. But she's certainly not our guys. But at the same time, we've got to be looking outside the box for anybody who's moving the ball forward on these critical Zionist issues, right?
Yeah, no, it's gold. And I mean, they are having conversations that people were unwilling to have. You know, you had people like Jim Trafficant from Ohio back in like, what was that, the 90s or the early 2000s? He was dunking on Israel left and right. Like, hey, we should probably not be sending them the then it was like 4 billion or 6 billion. But he actually went further and broke it down. Like, well, that's only like the direct aid. Like, then you got to think about like all these deployments and et cetera, et cetera. You know, we've got a real problem here. And apparently it's going to take like brown women to be the ones to do it, because absolutely no Republican is going to talk about this. Even things that they pretend to care about, like freedom of speech and censorship, like they're never going to do it. Like that woman in Texas, that she wouldn't like sign some like I refuse to support BDS thing or whatever. She was still, like some Palestinian woman that teaches here now. She wouldn't sign the thing. So they're like, oh, well, you don't get to work for the state anymore. Like, that's pretty interesting. So I don't care who's bringing these things up. And it's like what we were saying in the last episode about Tulsi Gabbard. Like, is she some sort of Polynesian leftist that's pro-gay marriage? Yeah. But is she also doing these other things that we enjoy? Yes. So we need more of that. You know, and like I said, I don't really care about federal politics that much. So as long as conversations that need to be had are being had, I don't care who's bringing it up.
Exactly. And that's what people need to understand about Trump, too. If Trump comes out tomorrow and says some really based stuff that pushes our message forward, we need to amplify that. OK, he's pivoted and stopped doing that. So, you know, we need to move on. And we need to understand politics in terms of we're trying to change the culture using mainstream political touch points and talking points as the vehicle to do so. There's all these people thinking we're in a position to actually take power, that one of these guys is our guy and we're going to be actually making policy in the near term. We're not that far ahead, guys. What we're doing is trolling the system. And that means we have to have the utmost agility. If somebody on the radical left starts pushing against the Zionist deep state, we need to amplify her message. If somebody else on the right does it, we need to amplify their message. Wherever our message is happening in mainstream discourse, we need to boost that. It's that simple. Stop worrying about what they'll do when they get elected, because they don't make the choices anyway.
Right. No, and I think people, that's the thing. I think they still have this hope that there's reform that can be made within the system. And I just don't think that's the case. So I think a lot of the reason why they don't want to like support that or like even amplify a positive message if it's from the wrong person is like deep down in their core, they don't want to admit that, yes, like it's over. Like our country is completely dead. It's being looted. It's done. Our politics are a joke. And, you know, I guess I understand people not wanting to readily admit, you know, something is that bad. But honestly, like that sort of hope that we're going to just magically like get Steve King to like just drop like a culture critique memes or something. It's like, I don't know. I really highly doubt it. So maybe let's anybody that wants to help us. Well, not really help us, but anybody that's talking anything slightly along our line, like let's amplify that part. I agree with you 100%.
Okay. Are you ready for a black pill? We had those two kind of white pills there. Are you ready for
I'm always prepared. Yes.
Okay. Breitbart reports from Gallup. 5 million Latin Americans coming to the U.S. in the next 12 months. 5 million Latin Americans plan to migrate to the United States in the next 12 months, and an estimated 42 million more say they want to enter the country. These statistics were in a report from Jim Clifton, the chairman CEO at Gallup. Begin quote. 42 million seekers of citizenship or asylum are watching to determine exactly when and how is the best time to make the move. This suggests that open borders could potentially attract 42 million Latin Americans, a full 5 million who are planning to move in the next 12 months.
Wow. That sounds good. I mean, are you surprised? You know, and that's another thing. People are like, oh, we got to support Trump. Blah, 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 immigration. Like, well, we'll see about that, because it doesn't seem like a lot has really changed. Trump, even in the State of the Union, was like, oh, we need to have more humanitarian support for people at the border. We need to have more judges and whatever. Like, I don't know. And with this, the whole natural conservative line, it's such shit. And I wish I had the graphics. Somebody posted some study. I forget where it's from. It was some sort of immigration, you know, some group or something. It was on like likeliness to use violence to get what you desire. And it was broken down by race. Oddly enough, there's still people that do that. You know, and the first one was done like years ago. And it was like fairly within reason. Like whites, obviously, like were very high on that. It only tracked whites, blacks, and Hispanics because there's so few Asians in America. It's like, even if they wanted to use violence aside from the roof Koreans, like they couldn't really get a lot done. But yeah, obviously, like non-whites and Hispanics, you know, don't happen to be in that category of white. So they tend to use violence to get things they desire, right? Well, look at their voting records too. They all vote hard left. So what does that tell you? Like, where are we headed? You know, what did the natural conservatives do to California? What are they doing to Texas and very soon Florida? Like, why on earth would they think this could work out? You know, and I don't think, honestly, I don't think they're as dumb as we kind of make it out. Like, I don't think Marco Rubio, I don't think like Ted Cruz, I don't think any of these people are dumb. They just know like that's the line and that's how they can benefit from their office is towing this line. So I don't know. You read stuff like that. You can't even be surprised. It's just, man,
now, what,
our politicians have sold us out utterly. So like, why would we not be preparing like and helping each other like build networks for like when it's actually over and politics just don't matter?
What do you think what do you think would actually happen if AOC or some other radical hardliner leftist actually won and they did abolish ICE and essentially open the border wide open? What would that look like?
It would probably look like essentially the way Southern California is organized now. You would just have like, you know, that like sweet, sweet Brazil aesthetic where there's people living in, you know, what are they called? Favelas. You've got like a sort of Boss Tweed, you know, mayor that like is just reaping the rewards of their spoil system. You're going to have, you know, corporate interest being fully and utterly in charge because you're going to have a population of people that isn't like smart enough to do anything about that. Like, in any way, how is this even like passively conservative?
But it's not conservative. I just wonder whether there would even be that many more people coming. I mean, has immigration been open enough to where most people who want to come here have already come here? Or would we be looking at some kind of like tsunami of people that would provoke some kind of sweet backlash? I just don't know the answer.
I would imagine there you would have the tsunami, you know, because there's people down there that legitimately want to be here. You know, and they probably would prefer to do it legally. Like there are unironically, people south of the border that don't want to just jump a fence. But if they gave them the go ahead and you can, and especially with things like Trump mentioned, like the leave for, you know, child leave or whatever, like after you have a kid, they're going to want to eat that sweet, sweet welfare up. And why wouldn't they, you know? And obviously there'd be like environmental issues. There would be, man, like think about that, just like that many people coming in, like think about how much plant life and animal life they'd destroy. Think about how much pollution they would do to, like to the water, like where they're crossing, like just all of that. Think about it. Like nobody even thinks about that. Like most like wildfires started in like Arizona and New Mexico are like done by like Mexicans, you know, like these people don't care. Like they use our national parks literally to like hide their, you know, drug running operations. Like imagine having more of that. Wonderful. The Mad Max apocalypse is upon us.
Now I'm kind of in a surly mood tonight. Do you think that a shock event like that could actually wake people up to stop looking to the federal government for solutions? Like would the state of Indiana start putting armed posses at the Kentucky line? I that's what I'm curious about. Like what would be the socio-cultural reaction?
I mean, that's a good question. I think like all things, the people would be extremely pissed off, but the state's hands are tied. You know, if the government decides, no, it's a state of emergency and we have to assist these people, what are they going to do? You know, I don't think there's people willing to take on the National Guard to make sure their town, you know, remains the way they would prefer it to remain.
Right.
So I think it would probably be like this deeply, I guess transparent. Yeah, it would be this like transparent sign of domination on the part of the left. And you'd think people would do something, but honest to God, I don't think they would. I think that would just be it. We would live in Mexico.
Yeah, I don't know. It's and maybe though, maybe that kind of context would be the one where white people, as white people, would start kind of seeing themselves as a minority within a hostile government, and would start kind of seeing themselves as a stateless people and organizing in more informal ways.
We'd see, and yeah, I don't know. Something like that. There would probably be people that would be, you know, more prepared, I guess, as it were. But for the most part, I just, you look at Europe and like what happened with the migrant crisis there, people are willing to eat a lot of shit. Like people can put up with a lot of nonsense until it's like literally in their living room. So right. I don't know. I would love to see. I would love to see what happens.
Right.
Okay. Well, hey, I guess we're going to cut this a little bit short today on account of your eyeballs trying to roll out of your head, I believe, right?
Yeah, I've been messaging in the private chat everybody that I'm having some severe pain here with my super duper pink eye, and we are going to have to cut it short. I was going to try to make a full show. We're 15 minutes short. I hope this benefited everybody. Now next week, let me run through a couple things here. Next week. We're going to have a guest interviewed. Next week, we're going to be interviewing about an occupation. The show will be well-structured and everything. We just had some unique problems. I thank everybody for hanging out through this rather unconventional episode. But we do hope you will tune in next week with where we're going to be interviewing somebody. I'll reveal it as soon as we decide which one. And you're going to learn new things about a new occupation that's dox-resistant, and also some conversations about dox-resistance, how to survive and thrive while being pro-white in this regime.
Yeah, and I guess just please pray for Matt Parrott's eyeball. You know, this might be the last we see of it. I don't know. Maybe the eye patch is going to become a staple of the show. We'll work that into the logo for next week.
Okay, well, the show goes on next week, whether I have an eyeball or not.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you, guys. Thanks for tuning in.